The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orchestral arrangements, including a suite of eclectic music from Cirque du Soleil, proving to everyone yet again that they are much more than an excellent marching band. Therefore, be it resolved that all members of this House congratulate Bandmaster Mr. Wendell Eisner and his cadre of capable musicians for a job well done and offer them best wishes for success in their musical futures. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 1:40. We will finish at 2:40. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Recent released documents from the Canadian Federation of Independent Business called the Business Barometer states, and I quote, Nova Scotia has had the biggest dive in business optimism of any province in the month of April, end of quote. My question to the Premier, based on what businesses are saying, how can the Premier be possibly so optimistic about revenue projections for the coming year?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we know that the Leader of the Opposition is opposed to any investment in economic development. We know that he opposes good jobs coming to this province. So, you know, I don't know what they base these things on, but perhaps the reason why businesses are feeling this is because they have been listening to the opposition.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, their information is based on actually reaching out and talking to small business owners, Mr. Speaker, something this government hasn't done for 4 years, Mr. Speaker, additionally, businesses are reporting that their hiring intentions, Mr. Speaker, are going soft. The Conference Board of Canada is reporting a tightening of the labour market, and the CFIB shows that hiring intentions are dropping. We know that the government is projecting losses of employment in 2013 by 1,100 jobs in the province, Mr. Speaker. These most recent indicators just give more evidence that in Nova Scotia, jobs are going to be harder to find. So my question to the Premier, how can the Premier tell Nova Scotians that the economy is in good shape when the people who do the hiring in this province are suggesting it's not?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what almost every forecasting organization in the country says is that Nova Scotia will, in fact, grow the number of people who are working. The labour force will grow as well, so the unemployment rate will grow. But the number of people working will increase, and they will be working at higher wages, Mr. Speaker. That is good for the province of Nova Scotia. Now, maybe the next time, because the Leader of the Opposition is, you know, so anti-economic development, will he tell us? Will he cut the rebate program to businesses that actually helps solidify solid jobs in this province? Will he do away with any kind of a loan program for business?
Honourable the Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
What I'm going to try to do for businesses end the last 4 years of misery they've suffered under this NDP government. Mr. Speaker, the CFIB tells us, Mr. Speaker, that the business confidence is dropping in our province as well. Mr. Speaker, it's at the lowest level in the entire country, Mr. Speaker. It seems that all Nova Scotians are losing confidence in the Premier's ability to manage the economy, Mr. Speaker. There's only one company in this province that has confidence in the NDP Premier, and that's Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, consumer confidence is low. Small business confidence is low. So how can Nova Scotians have any faith this government has built a budget on only fiction and fantasies?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I notice that the Leader of the Liberal Party, of course, wouldn't state where he stands on economic development matters. He won't say whether or not he would cancel the business rebate program. He won't say if he would cancel the program of any kind of loans to Nova Scotia companies in order to expand the economic base and create jobs, Mr. Speaker, because on this side, we have invested in Shipstart here for 11,000 new jobs, and projects, 440 jobs, IBM, 500 jobs, new jobs with Michelin, Mr. Speaker. We have supported Port Hawkesbury, 1,000 jobs in the Strait area, Mr. Speaker. In the Shelburne shipyards, we have invested for more jobs in southwestern Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. That is the record of this government.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what planet the Premier is on, because it's been very well recorded that in the last year, Nova Scotia had flatline economic growth, a grand total under his leadership of 0.2%. And now we see that Nova Scotia's small businesses are reporting that they have the lowest business confidence of any province in all of Canada. And I will quote from the CFIB, Nova Scotia has had the biggest dive in business optimism of any province, and I will table that. But Mr. Speaker, the Canadian Federation of Independent Business is the voice of Nova Scotia's small businesses, and so I will ask the Premier, why are our small businesses so depressed with his government's economic policies?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, if they actually read the provincial summary, what it actually says, of course, is that hiring intentions were, in fact, very high to begin with, and they are, in fact, higher this year than they were in 2011 and 2012.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I think I'll stick to the words of the Canadian Federation of Independent Business itself, who say that their business barometer now stands at 53.8, the lowest in all of the country. That's what they are saying, Mr. Speaker. So what is so unique about Nova Scotia that we have the lowest confidence among small business in the whole country? We have the highest power rates, the highest taxes. We have record out-migration. We have a huge new burden of regulation under his government. So I will ask the Premier, why does he think that our small businesses have the lowest optimism in all of Canada? Could it be related to those things?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, the simple fact of the matter is that business taxes in this province are the lowest they have been in more than 20 years. They are lower than the entire 10 years when the Conservatives were in power. They are lower than when the Liberal Party was in power. The small business rate has gone down. The large corporation capital tax has gone down. And if the member, leader would actually read what he tables, it says hiring intentions, while initially quite promising early in the year, have softened somewhat, although they remain better than the past 2011 and 2012 levels. Mr. Speaker, I will now ask this be properly tabled.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, they'll be so pleased to hear that the Premier thinks that they're a little bit higher than last year, but down so dramatically from 4 years ago is an accomplishment of his government. Because I'll tell you what's lower, Mr. Speaker, weekly wages in Nova Scotia for Nova Scotia workers, that's lower by 0.6%. And I'll tell you what's higher, Mr. Speaker, we have record electricity prices, the highest taxes, Mr. Speaker, groceries and inflation are all going up while Nova Scotian incomes are flat and the economy has stalled. That's why the Canadian Federation of Independent Business in that report reports that their two biggest cost constraints are the cost of fuel and energy, if the Premier truly wants to read the whole thing, and taxes and regulatory costs, Mr. Speaker. That's why jobs aren't being created. So, Mr. Speaker, small businesses are already voting in this province. They're voting with their feet. They're voting with their report. Why are they rejecting the Premier's policies so resoundingly?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'll just let... This is a quote from Elizabeth Beale, who is the president of the Atlantic Provinces Economic Council. And she says, but it would be wrong. It would be wrong to assume that the province will remain mired in the same cycle of slow economic growth. Now, with that, Mr. Speaker, she's referring to when the Conservatives and Liberals were in power. It has been for the last 20 years, just to be clear, the last 20 years. Now, from my point of view, she says, from my point of view, they don't want to listen to the truth, Mr. Speaker. They don't want to listen to the truth. But from my point of view, nothing could be further from the truth, Mr. Speaker. I will table that, because what it says is that our economy has turned the corner, that we are on our way to a brighter economic future in this province, because 4 years ago, in 2008, when that government led us into the largest single recession in our history since the Great Depression, it is no wonder that it is taking us and this government's work this long to recover.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, when small businesses were asked about what their major cost constraint was, business owners across the province indicated that it was fuel and energy costs were their biggest concerns. This should come as no surprise, Mr. Speaker. Businesses have listed energy as their number one concern for at least as long as the NDP government has been in power, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, why has the Premier left the energy future in the hands of Nova Scotia Power?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, quite the opposite. We inherited Nova Scotia Power and Emera from the Liberal government. They created Emera. They take every opportunity to try and bash us and bash, and they want everybody to forget that by legislation the Liberals actually created Emera. They want people to forget that, Mr. Speaker. But rather than do what they say, what we have done, Mr. Speaker, is that we have taken it upon ourselves to ensure that we get off of fossil fuels, that we stop chaining ourselves to the past strategy, which is to put ourselves at the mercy of the international fossil fuel market, where the 75% increase in coal and fossil fuels drove higher prices for Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, we are getting out of that model, Mr. Speaker, and building an energy future for the Atlantic Canada and Nova Scotia that will be based on tax-free local energy.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what they're building is an energy future where Nova Scotia Power's grip is only tightening, Mr. Speaker, on the pockets of ratepayers in the province of Nova Scotia. Never before in the history of this province has any government sided with the utility like the NDP government does, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, energy costs, Mr. Speaker, energy costs, Mr. Speaker, have risen 30% under the NDP government, Mr. Speaker. 30% under the NDP government. We have a Premier going around promoting a project that he can't even tell Nova Scotians how much it will cost them on their power bill, Mr. Speaker. He's going to leave that up, Mr. Speaker, to the President of Emera and Nova Scotia Power and their shareholders to determine sometime into the future, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, so why does the Premier continue to side with Nova Scotia Power instead of defending ratepayers?
Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we are the only government in the past 20 years that actually defends ratepayers. It was this government that first put down power rates in this province by 10%. It was the very first thing that we did in government, Mr. Speaker. The very first thing. And, Mr. Speaker, I might point out that we did that against the advice of the Leader of the Opposition, who said putting down power prices was bad public policy. He said lower energy prices were bad public policy. Well, Mr. Speaker, we disagree.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, let me be clear. Let me be clear, Mr. Speaker. What I said, Mr. Speaker, was that the Premier should do his job, Mr. Speaker, and not let the President of Nova Scotia Power dig deeper into the pockets of every Nova Scotian. Mr. Speaker, what I've said, Mr. Speaker, is the Premier should look Nova Scotians in the eye and actually tell them the truth, what he's going to do, Mr. Speaker. Instead, Mr. Speaker, when he's campaigning, telling them he's going to take a tax off when, in actual fact, Mr. Speaker, he added a tax to every power bill in the province of Nova Scotia.
It's called the NDP electricity tax, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if the Premier wants to revisit history, perhaps he could stand up and be honest with the people of the province of Nova Scotia on his future plan, Mr. Speaker. And it's about time, Mr. Speaker. You wanted to be the Premier. It's time you started doing the job and not pushing it off to a mayor in Nova Scotia Power. It's time you start standing up for ratepayers, Mr. Speaker, and not shareholders in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Let's see what you answer to that one.
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a government that stands up for the ratepayers and for the people of the province of Nova Scotia. And we do it by promoting local energy, Mr. Speaker, unlike the Leader of the Opposition, who says that he wants to break the monopoly in Nova Scotia. Right? He says that. And what does he want to do, Mr. Speaker? He wants to turn it over to Quebec Hydro, one of the largest monopolies in the world, Mr. Speaker. That's what the Leader of the Opposition wants to do, Mr. Speaker. What he wants to do is take local supply of energy out of the picture and put it in the hands of somebody from outside the province.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, not only has the government tabled what is in effect a deficit budget, but the rosy projections they are relying on for this fiscal year are already showing signs of strain. We both know that both business and consumer confidence are dropping. Mr. Speaker, the economy is also showing signs of weakness. Private sector forecasters are downgrading their outlook for the Canadian economy, and here in Nova Scotia, our economy showed that it was at a standstill last year at 0.2% growth. Mr. Speaker, with the Canadian economy being downgraded and a stalled provincial economy, how can the Minister of Finance be projecting a spike in revenue for this year?
The Honourable the Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we all know that Nova Scotians, our families and our businesses in this province, they want good jobs and a strong economy, and that's their top priority. And Mr. Speaker, we all know that previous governments left us to inherit the worst economic performance in the country. Mr. Speaker, we have worked very hard. We had a good four-year plan to return the province to balance. We are one of only four provinces in the country that have been able to achieve that, Mr. Speaker. And what this means, Mr. Speaker, is that Nova Scotia is turning the corner. Mr. Speaker, we have many, many important economic development opportunities on our horizon that will result in good jobs, a growing economy, and prosperity that means we'll be able to reinvest in public services in this province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the provincial outlook from the RBC states quite clearly, and I quote, "More surprisingly and disappointing to us, however, was the weakness in the majority of the Atlantic provinces. Nova Scotia's growth was a meager 0.2% compared to our forecast of 1.1%, with widespread drops in the goods-producing sector weighing heavily in the balance." And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have a stalled provincial economy, but what is worse is that this hides the recession outside Halifax. In rural Nova Scotia, we have unacceptably high unemployment rates matched with negative growth. My question, Mr. Speaker, is, with these dire indicators of our economy, how can the Minister of Finance justify her budget showing unrealistic revenue projections?
Minister of Finance.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we all know that last year was indeed a tough year in the goods-producing sector of our economy. We've seen the pulp and paper and the forestry and the mills hit particularly hard. And, Mr. Speaker, imagine what would have happened in Port Hawkesbury if that party had been in government. We would not have a plant that is back in production right now and able to contribute to the growth in our gross domestic product in the coming year, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the overall unemployment rate for Nova Scotia is 9.5%, and that hides a more concerning problem in rural Nova Scotia, with all regions outside of Halifax struggling with double-digit unemployment. Cape Breton is 18.6%, the North Shore 12.9%, Annapolis Valley 11.5%, and the Southern Region 13.2%. In every region of the province, unemployment has increased since June 2009. Our provincial economy stalled in 2012 with GDP only growing at 0.2% overall, meaning that rural Nova Scotia's economy has gone into reverse. Mr. Speaker, will the Finance Minister explain to all those Nova Scotians who have lost confidence in her government how she plans to maintain her overly rosy fiscal projections in the face of these dire facts?
Honourable the Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, what the Honourable Member conveniently fails to say is that the number of people who are looking for work is growing in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, that is an indicator of an expanded labour force, greater confidence. There are more people working today in Nova Scotia than there were 4 years ago, Mr. Speaker. There are more people in our labour force and more people who had given up under that crowd over there who are back into the labour force, Mr. Speaker, because they know good jobs are being created in this province.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a year ago, the Minister of Education thanked Wayne McKay and the members of the Task Force on Bullying and Cyberbullying for their hard work. She also recommended that acting on the Task Force recommendations is an important part of the NDP's plan for education. One of the important recommendations from the Task Force was number 64 on page 92. It recommends that the Department of Education create or adopt a digital citizenship and an online safety program for elementary and junior high students, and that students should be required to take the program before having access to school computers. So my question to the Minister is, after having the task force recommendations for more than a year, when will the Minister of Education finally take action on Recommendation 64?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for that question. We have been working on the digital citizenship component of this within the department. We are looking at all of our programs and our curriculum from primary to grade 12 to make sure that our children are receiving the appropriate education around citizenship and digital work at their age-appropriate level. We're making sure that it's as robust as we need it to, because we need to make sure that our children are having the information to make themselves safe when they are working on the internet. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, everybody believes that the parents have a role to play when it comes to their children's online activities. We also know that technology changes quickly and that many parents are not computer literate as they'd like to be. Recommendation 66 of the Task Force on Bullying and Cyberbullying asks the Department of Education to create or adopt a program to improve technological and digital literacy for parents and community members. Recommendation 67 suggests the Department of Education create a digital and printed parents' guide to combat bullying and cyberbullying to be made available each September. So my question to the Minister is, when will the Minister adopt Recommendations 66 and 67 and finally give parents the tools they need to help combat bullying and cyberbullying?
Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for the questions. And because we're approaching our response in a collaborative manner, I am going to ask our lead minister to answer that, the Minister for the Status of Women. Thank you.
The Minister responsible for the Status of Women.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As recently as yesterday, I spent time discussing this very recommendation with Professor McKay. It's certainly been a topic of interest to a lot of Nova Scotians because I think we all recognize we need to better understand the use of technology and its responsible use, I should say. And certainly, while we value the perspective of the task force on bullying and cyberbullying on this issue, I think there's probably a wider community response in terms of providing learning materials to adults, parents and guardians and grandparents and others. And we're certainly looking at it from a broad perspective. I think there's a role for libraries, there's a role for parents' associations and others. But I want to say there's already excellent materials on this issue that are available through CyberSafe Girls and many other cyber programs. Thank you. And so I just want to say that we are collecting what's currently available and looking at what more needs to be done on this issue. Thank you.
Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, another task force recommendation, number 68, recommends the Department of Education identify opportunities to incorporate social and emotional learning into school curriculum offerings. My question is, when will the Minister of Education finally adopt recommendation 68 and all the task force recommendations that have not yet been addressed?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
And thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I will ask the lead minister to respond to this question. Thank you. That's the Minister for the Status of Women.
The Honourable Minister responsible for the status of women.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We could obviously go through these recommendations one by one, but I want to assure the House that a number of them have been included in the action plan that has been led by the Department of Education and the Minister. A number of them are actually under active consideration, and we're revisiting the rest. And certainly, as I've said in the past, the recommendations and research from the task force have made a valuable contribution, and we will continue to look at them one by one to make sure that in some way the intent of those recommendations are met. We're doing this with the input and advice from Professor McKay, and I certainly plan to be meeting with other members of the original task force to get their perspective, because obviously as time goes on things change a little, but we value the work that's gone into that and we will honour their work. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. You know, Mr. Speaker, this is a government which would rather put Nova Scotia's energy future in the hands of the Newfoundland government and Nova Scotia Power rather than the made in Nova Scotia options that most of the experts now say would be cheaper than the Maritime Link. Mr. Speaker, on April 25th, the Consumer Advocate sent a letter to the Minister of Energy in response to his comments here in question period and also to the media, in which he said, the assumption the time frame provides adequate time is not correct. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, does the Minister of Energy believe the Consumer Advocate is wrong?
The Honourable the Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, we have a made in Nova Scotia policy here for our energy in this province. And we're diversifying, getting away from coal that has been the base of our energy for far, far too long. And coal has gone up in price for the last 7 or 8 years. And now we're diversifying into wind and tidal and sustainable biomass and natural gas, heritage hydro, and the Maritime Link is an important part of that mix that will allow us to look at more renewables and more sources of energy from other jurisdictions. So I think the UARB process is unfolding as it should, and we'll await the decision by the end of July.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, earlier in question period, the Premier tried to claim his government was standing up for ratepayers, and yet he and his minister dismissed the very representative of ratepayers at the hearing. You know, Mr. Speaker, in the same letter that I already tabled, the Consumer Advocate said to the minister, quote, the refusal to provide additional time raises the query whether the province is more interested in pushing the project through the public hearing process than ensuring the project is given a thorough and considered review. Mr. Speaker, does the Minister of Energy think the consumer advocate is wrong?
The Honourable the Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, during this whole process, through the development of the Maritime Link Act and then the regulations that were out last summer for consultation, we heard from various parties. We never heard from the Liberal Party at all, but we certainly did hear from the consumer advocate, and we actually, Department of Energy staff, sat down with him, and he had some useful information to pass along to us about the scope of the project, and we listened, and we continued to listen to Nova Scotians, and that's an important part of the process. So again, the UARB is considering all the evidence, and we'll look forward to their decision within sometime this summer.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister well knows that we, at the time of the regulations, endorsed the consumer advocate's position. As he's right, he has written the board and said and acknowledged that very fact, that the consumer advocate had said that that might work. The consumer advocate has now seen that information and has said no more time is needed. The minister can change it with the regulations. Continuing on with the letter, the consumer advocate says, quote, there is a massive amount of information to assimilate. The applicants who were able to delay filing the application when they needed more time appear to be the only entities which have had the advantage of adequate time. So, Mr. Speaker, why does the Minister of Energy believe that Nova Scotia Power deserved adequate time, but nobody else does?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We certainly consulted with the consumer advocate. For further, I want to turn it over to the Premier for a comment.
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, all they have with respect to Muskrat Falls is cynicism and despair. That's what they're peddling, Mr. Speaker. No facts. No facts, no alternative project. But I want to read for the member for Dartmouth East the comments of the speech today from the Honourable Jim Prentice to the Maritime Energy Association. This is what he said, Mr. Speaker. He said, when I was in politics, I had the privilege of serving as both the industry minister and the environment minister. These experiences left me with an affinity for the kind of development that helps generate widespread and long-term prosperity and is at the same time environmentally sustainable. In my view, Lower Churchill is all of this and more. It is a transformational project for Atlantic Canada that will take the region to a new level of industrial development, Mr.
Order,
Speaker.
Order.
That.
Order. 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 The Honourable Premier has the floor. Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the comments of the Honourable Mr. Prentice is not about despair. It is about hope and optimism. It is about confidence in the people of Atlantic Canada, something the member for Dartmouth East knows nothing about.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, evidence is mounting that the Maritime Link is not the lowest cost alternative to meet Nova Scotia's energy needs. Can't hear myself. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The consumer advocate and small business advocate, who represent the ratepayers, hired a consultant to analyze this mega project, and he wrote, and I quote, the comparative analysis is oversimplistic, lacks robustness, and appears stacked to support the applicant's desired outcome, end of quote. The ORB's own consultant filed evidence that the Maritime Link project has not been demonstrated to be a definitive, least-cost, incremental supply resource for an SPI system. My question to the Minister, with the expert testimony piling up that states the Maritime Link is not the lowest-cost alternative, will the Minister agree to extend the review time for the UARB so that a truly fair and independent analysis can be done? I'll table that.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, at the UARB, there's a lot of evidence been presented, certainly interveners and experts, and I think about the majority of those experts, 9 out of the 14 actually, are presenting evidence that it is a positive event, it's the right way to go. It will provide the lowest, fairest rates for Nova Scotians. So let's let the UARB do their job and look and and you know, to test and come across all that evidence. It's really their role to make that determination.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The NDP is doing everything it can to force ratepayers to absorb the cost of Muskrat Falls and pay for its expensive electricity schemes. This government created new legislation that stripped the decision-making power of the UARB through the Maritime Link Act. This act removes the authority of the UARB to make an independent decision. Will the minister explain why it is necessary to implement new legislation to remove power from an independent review board and give it to the government?
The Honourable the Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, sometimes it gets quite noisy in this chamber, and perhaps the Honourable Member missed the quote that was read a few minutes ago, so I'm going to read it again from the Honourable Jim Prentice. And Mr. Prentice had this to say just at lunchtime today. Quote, when I was in politics, I had the privilege of serving as both industry minister and environment minister. Wow. These experiences left me with an affinity for the kind of development that helps generate widespread and long-term prosperity and is, at the same time, environmentally sustainable. In my view, Lower Churchill is all this and more. It is a transformational project for Atlantic Canada that will take the region to a new level of industrial development. I hope the Honourable Member has heard that this time. I'll table that.
A wise conservative, an oxymoron.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Well, if it makes the minister feel good, I'll read it again, Mr. Speaker. This is a 35-year decision, a $1.5 billion decision that will affect multiple generations of Nova Scotians. Yet this government, one that says it is for transparency and fairness, has ordered that it receive less scrutiny than it deserves. Clearly, this government must not be open to an independent, fair review of the project. Or why else would they not agree to an extensive review at the time? Will the minister explain why his government had to order that power be removed from the independent review board and that an arbitrary deadline of 6 months be given to complete the review?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and certainly... you know, we have a reasonable time frame here that would allow for decision-making to be made based on the evidence that's presented before the UARB. And unlike the Conservative Party, this party has a plan, has a vision for an energy future that is sustainable and will provide rates for 35 years. So I say to the Conservative member, stop being a Luddite.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, on November 1st, 2012, I questioned the Finance Minister on her intentions to streamline the bureaucratic duplication with regards to the Nova Scotia Film Tax Credit. At the time, she stated, and quote, we are doing the analysis on the process. However, here we are months later, and it seems that nothing has taken place. The applicants are still frustrated by the process, and seemingly no progress has been made by the minister. Mr. Speaker, will the minister tell Nova Scotians what steps she's taken since November 1st, when she committed to meeting with the industry and fixing what seems to be a broken process?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. The film industry, as we know, is a very important industry in the province, and the film tax credit is a tool to support and advance the growth of that industry, and it has certainly been a benefit to the industry and to the province. Recently, we have had the hiring of a new person to oversee Film Nova Scotia, and there's been some expansion of their mandate with respect to the creative industries, and a new CEO has been hired, and in the fullness of time, Mr. Speaker, there will be the work that I made reference to in the fall. It's still our intention to proceed with a review. It will be a robust review that will involve the industry to gather up all of their perspectives. Some of those perspectives I've already heard as I meet with people individually, and we will continue to work with that industry to ensure that they are stable and prosperous in our province.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the tax credit is important and it's a powerful tool to our economy, but it is disappointing that these problems are persisting with the processing of the applications. The minister has had ample time since I first brought this to her attention, and now we have another example of procedural duplication and frustratingly low processing times. Mr. Speaker, I will table a letter that was sent to the minister on April 1st of this year and the accompanying email, as well as the correspondence that I tabled when the issue was raised last November. I'm going to table. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the fact that the minister is now undertaking the review is too late. We need a more urgent response because this is going to send industry participants, filmmakers, to other provinces if we don't address it. Mr. Speaker, since I made the minister aware of these problems over 5 months ago, why has there been no progress made in eliminating the frustratingly slow processing times for this tax credit?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, as I indicated to the Honourable Member, the film industry is very important. The tax credit is very important. There is some reorganization going on at the level of the film and the creative industries council. And there is a working group within government that are starting to define the parameters of a review and a consultation. And as I indicated, that consultation can only take place with the full involvement of those in the industry who know it best, and that certainly will occur. With respect to the administration of the film tax credit in the Department of Finance, I have met with officials in the department. We have identified parts of that process which we think have been impediments to a timely response to applicants, and we have been working diligently to remove those impediments, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what we're talking about today around the film tax credit really amounts to red tape, to slow processes, to an inability to respond to business. Mr. Speaker, the film industry in our province is worth millions of dollars, and the producers of these films are putting hundreds of thousands and sometimes millions of dollars on the table to do productions in our province. And if we can't process those applications in a timely fashion, people will go elsewhere. And the letters I table today speak to that. They speak to a specific incident and a film where that is an issue, and the filmmakers will leave. That's what I want to raise with the minister today. Setting out a robust performance or looking at the parameters is one thing, but this isn't a new tax credit. This is a tax credit we've had in place for almost 20 years. We were the first province in the country to have it, and it's been a good thing, so I don't know what's gone wrong at the Department of Finance, but I'd like to ask the minister, will she consider the letter I tabled today and respond without delay and immediately get to work to eliminate these unnecessary delays that are frustrating a very important industry?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Speaker, there are three departments involved in working with the cultural industries and the film industry in particular. The Department of Economic Development, the Department of Communities, Culture and Heritage, as well as the Department of Finance. We are breaking down the silos between these departments so that we can have the best response to the industry possible. And as I said, we have already identified some of the impediments for the processing of these tax credits, and we are diligently working to remove them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Nurses in this province say staffing rules for nursing homes and residential care facilities are dangerously out of date. They note that this affects their ability to provide care for their residents, resulting in unreasonable workloads, and even impacts bed vacancies in long-term care facilities. So my question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, will the minister sit down with representatives for the nurses and fix the problem before it turns into a crisis?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had the honour with the Premier today to actually meet with and address the nurses in Truro at their AGM, Mr. Speaker. We were well received, and I have to say there was a lot of discussion between the nurses, the union, and the Premier and I. And we're going to move forward as we continue to do, as we've done in the last 4 years, with partners, Mr. Speaker. And our partners are the unions in this province, Mr. Speaker. They are the nurses in this province, Mr. Speaker. And we're going to continue to work to ensure that the staffing levels meet the guidelines that are set out across the country, to ensure that patients receive the adequate care they need. And that's the approach we've taken over the last 4 years, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
There are more than 2,400 seniors waiting to be placed in a long-term care facility today, Mr. Speaker. Janet Hazelton told reporters that, quote, "We can have all kinds of beds open, but if we don't have nurses to look after the residents, what's the point?" End of quote. Learning that there are vacancies but not enough nurses is cold comfort to those 2,400 seniors waiting for placement. My question to the minister is, how many bed vacancies have been left unfilled because the government has failed to address the, quote, "dangerously out-of-date staffing rules for nurses"?
Honourable the Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and that is just simply not true, what the member opposite is talking about. Back in 2011, we did a staffing review, to see what levels were sufficient in long-term care facilities, Mr. Speaker. Last year alone, we increased the budget of over $2 million, which increased over 34 positions across facilities in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. It's one thing that we are proud about doing is ensuring that we work with our partners, with the unions, those who represent the important work that nurses do in the province, Mr. Speaker. I think our track record is indicated much better than the track record of what the former government has had, Mr. Speaker. We're working with them to solve issues in health care, not working against them.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The seniors have worked long and hard, contributed to our economy and to our province our whole lives. They deserve to be treated with the utmost respect. This government needs to get their ducks in a row when it comes from addressing the needs of seniors. When they halted bed construction, they have left beds remain empty while 2,412 seniors wait. The CBC article states the government has said that they are willing to talk about possible changes. I will table that. And the seniors deserve a better commitment, and so do the nurses, Mr. Speaker. Will the government update policies for long-term care facilities in this session so that nurses and seniors have a fair opportunity to receive the proper care?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I believe actions speak louder than words, Mr. Speaker. And the actions that we have taken over the last 4 years to support seniors in this province, Mr. Speaker, talks for themselves. Seniors know that we reduced taxes that they pay in this province, Mr. Speaker. More low-income Nova Scotians, senior Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, pay no income tax here in this province. Under the Conservatives, they felt it was okay to charge seniors income tax, Mr. Speaker. Under the NDP government, we respect the commitment that seniors have had to build this economy. That's why we ensure that the loved ones that are left in the communities have more money in their pockets to remain in their homes, Mr. Speaker. We reduce the requirements when we use and require the seniors to pay in a long-term care facility, Mr. Speaker. I'm glad of the work that we've done over the last number 4 years, and our track record will show that we're committed to seniors, Mr. Speaker. Unlike the 10 years under Conservative government, Mr. Speaker, that used to strip every last dime from seniors who entered long-term care, I'm proud of our record.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, the delivery of health care in a timely manner requires planning,
It requires the development of targets. It requires a plan to meet the targets. And it requires monitoring. Mr. Speaker, it also requires accountability to the people of Nova Scotia for results. Since 2004, Nova Scotia has been the beneficiary of over $159 million from the federal government in the form of Wait Time Reduction Fund, a fund established to augment provincial efforts in addressing wait times in our healthcare system. Could the Premier please indicate how the NDP government has spent the over $34 million his NDP government has received since assuming office addressing wait times?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we have taken a whole host of measures to ensure that the people in Nova Scotia are receiving better care sooner. We now have one of the best waiting lists on cardiac surgery in the country.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, a very interesting response. During estimates, I asked the Minister of Health and Wellness to table a list, one simple list, of what they spent the Wait Times Reduction Fund on in 2012-13 and what they plan to spend the money on this fiscal year. Here, in part, is the response received. The Federal Wait Times Reduction Fund is a federal transfer that goes directly to general revenue. It is not based on any specific funding. Could the Minister of Health and Wellness please explain why the Wait Time Reduction Fund goes directly to general revenue?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Mr. Speaker, the budget for health care that we just tabled about a month ago, Mr. Speaker, and passed, Mr. Speaker, spends over 40% of the total provincial budget on health care, Mr. Speaker. Over $3.9 billion is spent providing services for Nova Scotians so that they can gain access to the services in a timely manner, Mr. Speaker. We've worked hard over the last 4 years to ensure that we reduce wait times. We can always do better. We know that. But I'm proud of the wait times that we've had, some of the guarantees and the guidelines that we've met here in Nova Scotia. I can say, without a doubt, in Nova Scotia, if you're severely ill or sick, you get into the hospital, you get the services you need. Yes, we do need to do some work on the wait time, orthopedic wait time surgeries. We recognize that. We're going to continue to work with our partners, those surgeons within the district health authorities, the district health authorities themselves, to try to bring that wait list down, Mr. Speaker, to a reasonable time. And we're going to continue to work in that manner over the coming years.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, provinces across the country, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, Ontario, and Newfoundland, have all established wait time reduction plans. They set targets for themselves, and they went about achieving them using the Wait Time Reduction Fund to augment their plans. It would appear that this NDP government saw fit to dump the money into general revenue. Whether the fund was used to balance the budget or to bail out Bowater, it would appear the money was not used for what it was intended. Could the minister please explain to the almost 3,000 patients waiting for orthopedic surgery, the 4,000-plus patients waiting for cataract surgery, why the Wait Time Reduction Fund was not used to reduce wait times in this province?
The Honourable the Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I don't even know where to start with that question. We work hard here in the province to ensure that we provide services for health care services for Nova Scotians. When the federal health transfer started, Mr. Speaker, it was supposed to be a 50-50 cost-sharing venture for the provinces and territories. I believe we're just over 20% now, Mr. Speaker, here in the province. And the federal government is backing away from the health accord, which puts more pressure on all the jurisdictions across the country under all political parties, Mr. Speaker. As Ministers of Health, we're concerned about the federal government's cutback and their approach to getting out of health care delivery. We need the federal government to be at the table with the health ministers. Health ministers who are conservatives, health ministers who come from the Saskatchewan Party, from the Liberal Party, and from the NDP. We all talk on the same level, Mr. Speaker, when we meet as ministers of health for across the country. We need the federal government at the table. We're working hard to make sure that we can keep up our end of the bargain with delivering a health care here in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Mr. Speaker, last week the NDP used a majority government to smother the truth by not allowing the Internal Affairs Committee of this House to review the government's $27 million budget misrepresentation. My question is to the Minister of Finance. Why is this government intent on hiding this information from Nova Scotians?
Minister of Finance? The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have had a full airing of this issue at the Public Accounts Committee with the staff from the Department of Finance, as well as with the Auditor General. We have heard from the former Minister of Finance on this, Mr. Speaker. I have spoken on this. Mr. Speaker, there's nothing more to be said on this. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, even the member for Halifax Atlantic said in support of the motion on April 23, 2013, it's extraordinarily important that this House be permitted to do its work. And I'll table that quote out of Hansard. Keeping this information from the Internal Economy Committee and therefore the people of Nova Scotia shows complete disrespect to this House and to the people of this province. My question is to the Premier. If the NDP has nothing to hide with its $27 million cover-up, why does this government vote down the motion and refuse further review?
Order, order. The word cover-up is unparliamentary. I'd ask the Honourable Member to retract that.
I will retract that. Error.
Thank you. And I make those decisions on that, and I'll do it in due time. The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, there was no error. Everything that happened happened exactly as it should. And what amazes me, Mr. Speaker, is that the other night here in the House of Assembly, and I have to say, unfortunately, I was engaged elsewhere, so I wasn't actually able to be here. But I took the time to go back and read the Hansard of the member for Halifax Fairview, the former finance minister, where he went through this issue piece by piece, and he talked about the way in which you go about putting together an almost $9 billion budget, how those lines are determined, when the cutoff dates. Now, Mr. Speaker, I understand that at the end of that, that all the members of the House gave the member for Halifax Fairview a standing ovation. Here, here. Yes, sir. Now, I'll tell you something, Mr. Speaker. He deserves it, and I believe him.
Here. The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Minister of Health and Wellness. Seniors in Cape Breton have been left behind by this NDP government, with more than 2,400 seniors on the waiting list for long-term care and no signs of movement on tendering new beds. It has become quite clear the NDP have forgotten about the seniors who cannot stay in their own homes. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, how many seniors are currently waiting for placement in a long-term care facility, and how many of those are from Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the more important things that people want to ensure that their government's doing is ensure that they have options when they come to receiving care here in Nova Scotia. We know, and I've said this many, many times in the House, government, whoever's in government in the future, are always going to be in the business of providing long-term care. They're going to need to replace them. They're going to need to build new ones. We're committed to that, and any future government has to be committed to that. But one of the things we've seen over the last 10 years or so is a lack of support, I believe, or appropriate support for home care services. When we looked at the long-term care wait list, over 43% of those individuals waiting for a long-term care bed placement have never received community care or home care. And that, I can't understand why. So that's why we invested $22 million last year in addition. We're spending over $190 million a year trying to provide home care services so that people have options. That's what Nova Scotians want, that's what seniors want, and that's what we're going to do, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
The question was, how many need a bed? Mr. Speaker, in February, the Cape Breton Post reported that an average of 140, and I'll repeat that, 140 beds were lost daily in the Cape Breton Health Authority because of long-stay patients waiting to get into nursing homes. And I'll table that article, Mr. Speaker. This is unacceptable. No one, Mr. Speaker, no one in Nova Scotia would agree that the solution to the growing need for long-term care beds is to put those seniors in the hospital. This is causing a delay and taking up critical space in our hospitals. So my question is to the Minister, what will the Minister do to guarantee that the seniors in his, that the seniors his government has displaced will be moved into long-term care beds and out of the acute care beds?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This issue around long-term care placement is an issue that's not just happening within our borders, Mr. Speaker. I've chaired the national meeting of ministers of health from across the provinces and territories. We all are trying to struggle to ensure that we meet the needs of our seniors. We know the demographic shift, Mr. Speaker, in the coming years, where we're going to have more seniors living in not only our province, but across the country. That's why, collectively, we're looking at how do we best meet those needs of seniors in our jurisdiction. That's why we believe we need a national policy or strategy on senior care, Mr. Speaker. That's why the premiers are talking about it through the Health Innovation Committee, Mr. Speaker. That's why ministers of health are speaking across the country to try to collectively ensure that we're meeting the needs of seniors. We're going to continue to move in that direction. We're going to continue to invest in long-term care facilities. We're going to continue to invest in home care services, Mr. Speaker, so our seniors, those who built our economy, can have options when they get into their elderly years, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the seniors that have built our economy in Cape Breton, it is reported that sometimes they have to wait as long as 3 years to get into a facility. Families are pushing themselves to the brink to provide care for their aged loved ones. And a three-year wait, Mr. Speaker, is unacceptable. The government must consider the well-being of the generous caregivers in this province when they decide to halt plans for the production of long-term beds. So when will the minister put out a tender for new long-care beds in Cape Breton? Thank you.
Order, order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. I would like to recognize the Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture on an introduction, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and the members of the House, I'd like to draw your attention to the East Gallery, where today we are joined by Lockport Regional High School teachers. We are teachers and students. We have, Mr. Speaker, we have 30 grade 10 and 11 students, 15 from beautiful Lockport and 15 from Quebec, and the exchange students from Quebec. Anne Swinewood is the teacher, and I ask the House to give a warm welcome. Perfect timing. Thank you.